righty. Well, welcome everybody. This is Cambridge Inside Out on April 20th, 2021. I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
And, you know, it's sort of interesting times. I think maybe I'll make a few little announcements about things that came out of the city today.
Okay, yes, you're more ahead than I am. Yeah.
Probably the easy one, but something that's a little near and dear to us is that they did finally announce that the curbside composting, the organics collection is going to restart on May 17th.
I had heard that actually in a meeting before, but it wasn't definite. So now it's announced. Great. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's ready to rock and roll. And perhaps the biggest late breaking news from the city of Cambridge was that one of the things that has been long awaited has been this digital equity study.
Okay.
It's kind of long in coming, and it's now they put out a press release. I have a link to it.
Good.
That people can download it, or you can even request a copy of it.
Okay.
You know, and I think by most
people, you can request a copy of the 200.
You can actually get a physical copy as well.
I would like that.
So I'll
actually just one of us. You can get it, and I'll borrow yours.
Okay. But this is, I think, largely seen as the first step. Mm-hmm. That comes before, and I could have some of the details wrong because this is not my big burning issue.
Right, yeah.
Is to have a digital equity study, and then from there, the broadband feasibility study that the council has been demanding for some time. They're actually separate matters.
But one feeds into the other, which
some
of the people that are gung-ho and let's get municipal didn't want to see connected, but they are, because the people that are most disenfranchised, I think, from internet or from cost are people that can't afford it. And a lot of them are in public housing and whatever. So this digital equity study really is looking at that, right?
And also if you look at the rhetoric that comes out of the group that's primarily pushing for the broadband, municipal broadband.
Yeah.
They often quote the need for digital equity and to reach people who can't, especially the lessons learned during COVID in terms of access to education.
And actually the people working on this, I assume it's the same people back in, let's see, it was November, the meeting that Patty Nolan had talked about this, although, you know, the council member that were very annoyed, what about the municipal broadband? But
right.
They pointed out, they did studies in the housing and they saw the need there. So to me, let's get that done. I mean, I'd like to see competition, but a lot of people can afford to get internet here. And you brought up one of the comments about the new money coming out of the federal government and how some of the leaders of this movement say, oh, now we can get money from the government.
We can tap into that. Yeah.
That's not for us.
Yeah. You know, it is.
That's it's for sort people of like, that really need it out there in areas like that schools don't have it. I mean,
going back like into the, you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt there, you know, where they were talking about rural electrification. Wouldn't it be great if Cambridge said we'd like to put all of our electrical infrastructure underground?
Well, where did
meanwhile
cable
people
come
in
from?
Tennessee didn't have power at all, right?
Yeah, cable originated in rural. I mean, it was that's how cable originated. They originated all cable TV, but. Come on. We do need competition. We do need a better, people should have choices, but let's get people that really need it, like the kids and people that, you know, I can't pay the $80 a month or whatever. There's plenty of people here that will pay it because they can do it. That is, it's become a utility that you have to have. Okay.
Yeah, I've seen some very interesting arguments made that, you know, the cable and internet access, actually there was even an opinion from Justice Clarence Thomas of all people, basically to sort of, you know, kind of an answer back to some of the people who are pretty wrongheaded about these things, saying that, you know, it has to be viewed as a so-called common carrier. And I think that's kind of right.
And
it's sort of become that. I don't know if it started out that way.
Yeah.
You know, certainly my experience with internet began just being a university guy, and it was something that the military and the academic world kind of, you know, But then again, back in those days, people didn't have personal computers at home either.
No.
You know?
Oh,
so, but the world changed when the PC showed up on everybody's desk and in their phones, especially, you know?
Well, yeah, not in your phone, but yeah, you don't have one.
Exactly. Yeah.
It is amazing.
I haven't unplugged mine. So if it rings during the broadcast, I'll have to run over there to shut it off.
Okay.
So, so those are sort of big things. I wanted to just mention a couple of personal things here, though.
Yeah.
You know, first off, today was vaccination.
Yeah, you got your card.
Dose number two. So I'm now fully equipped with superpowers.
Yeah, sure.
It's kind of a great feeling actually to know that, you know, that I'm now a part of the club. I guess you're the full effect.
I'm fully immunized. Yeah, you have to wait 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the liberation of being able to actually go and sit and have a few beers with people, which you can do now anyway, but the thing is that to do it without any realistic concern.
I'm still concerned about going inside and sitting with a lot of other people talking because eating. You can't eat with a mask. And I told you, I went to a movie for the first time at the Kendall. I took a chance, but no one talks in a movie. There were six people. I trusted it and I was fully immunized and people wore masks, but I did it mainly because, you're not talking in a movie and I trusted the air was, you know, whatever.
So that's a pretty big thing. And the other one, which I'm going to say, so, you know, maybe those who've watched this on TV don't know this, but a lot of people know that I've been driving a 1979.
Oh Volkswagen. My gosh. You should tell this story. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I've owned three cars in my life, a Beetle, a 1973 Beetle, a 1986 Volkswagen bus, and then a 1979 Volkswagen bus.
Yeah.
And then another 1979.
So you really wedded to the Volkswagen family.
I've been a total VW guy ever since. Wow. I have actually owned my Beetle before I even had a driver's license. So I have been a VW guy my whole driving life since I was like 27. And I finally gave up my bus the other day.
Wow.
And it's towed away. It's in Attleboro and it's not coming home anymore.
Nope.
But if all goes well, I will hopefully be driving a Honda Civic soon.
Very
which is
reliable.
A radical change for me.
Yeah.
Very reliable car, more modern. Yeah. And it was actually almost comical when I was just giving it a little spin just to see.
You didn't know what to do with it, right?
I didn't know how to open the windows. I didn't know how to read the odometer. I didn't
have Bluetooth, which you don't know about.
You know, it's sort of like, what are all these gadgets here?
Yeah.
I feel a little like Frozen Caveman Lawyer from Saturday Night Live, you know? So I'm entering the modern world. What airbags? Oh, yeah. Anyway, so those are kind of,
yeah, don't try to use a payphone anywhere either, Robert. Okay.
What? Is that still a dime?
You can't even find one for 50 cents, I don't think. Because then if you don't have a cell phone, forget it. Yeah.
Yeah. So those are kind of big changes. One thing back onto the Civic front, that I think I think we need to talk about this a little bit, is that so the day is coming soon, I believe on April 27th, when the Cambridge School Committee will make a decision. I'm not sure if they're going to make their decision, but they're supposedly going through their final interviews with the candidates for interim school superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the only reason really I want to talk about this is that, you know, it is my strongly considered opinion, and I've heard much the same point of view expressed by other people as well.
Okay.
That the decision for who's going to be not just the interim school superintendent, but the school superintendent was already made, that it was going to be Victoria Greer, who, as far as I'm concerned, may be a fine choice. But that decision was made a while back.
Okay.
And I actually tuned into a school committee subcommittee meeting, the ad hoc one where they were talking about this. Where they actually talked about, well, can we just name somebody now? And the point I want to make only is this, is that if that's what you were going to do, I really would have preferred if you'd just done it then. Mm-hmm. Because putting together a dog and pony show and getting applications and putting together three finalists, one of whom has now dropped out, because I think it's pretty clear this process is not really a process. That's just, you know, look, I could respect, just make a decision. You should have done it back then.
Can I ask you again? I know I asked you yesterday, but my mind doesn't hold things in. He announced he was leaving in June, right? Or end of June.
Kenneth Salim. Yeah, that's right. So announced like around, back then. Yeah.
And how long have they known that? I mean, it's been at least what, 4 months, 3 months?
Not that long. No.
Oh, so is that why they said it had to be an interim? Because it wasn't long enough to find a final?
Well, I think maybe all it takes is one school committee member to say, well, I think we shouldn't be rushing into this.
Okay, let's but this is ridiculous. So you think she'll be the final person?
Yeah,
I mean, are they going to have another search? Is that what's going to happen?
Listen, look at it this way. There's no way. Ms. Greer is not effectively the superintendent of schools for Sharon anymore, because they basically told her, you're gone. They basically booted her, but she's still being paid for the time being.
Well, wait a minute. They booted her because she was seeking this, or they were going?
No. It's a matter of some controversy that we needn't go into now. But the thing is, so basically.
Okay, I don't know any of this.
And she applied to be, I believe, the Arlington school superintendent as well, but didn't get that job. So anyway, there's no way that a person who's already been a school superintendent in a Massachusetts community is coming to Cambridge to be an interim school superintendent. I mean, let's get real. You know,
where was the other candidate? What's his position?
I mean, honestly, he's not a superintendent. You can look at the names. Not only from my own instincts about this, but from what I've heard from other people, is that the other names were just there as formalities.
Okay.
It's kind of like when the Democratic City Committee nominates three names for election commissioner, knowing full well that the one person who's going to get it is the one person who's going to get it. And the other two are there just as formalities, you know. Mm. I would not personally appreciate being made part of a process just so that people could say there was a process.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I want to be really clear. I'm not down on the candidate. I mean, it's like, come on, let's not pretend. I mean, you know, I remember when there were issues about renewing a city manager contract in years past, where people would say, well, we have to go through this evaluation process, and then we have to have the public part of this, and then we have to have all these interviews, and we have to bring in a consultant and a search. We got to, you know, get a headhunter to go do this and do that. And it was always Tim Toomey who would say, I just want to remind everybody that all it takes is 5 votes and we can do it at any moment, right? And, you know, because I think he wanted to at least remind everybody that, you know, that if you're just going through the process for the sake of saying process, you know, then come on, let's just be real. You know, if you know what you're going to do, just do it. I can respect that. I really can. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's the person you say, you know, this is somebody we know from way back, or, you know, honestly, I'm very forgiving about it. This is somebody I knew from high school. Like, we all went to high school with this person. This is great.
Yeah.
You know, I'd say, fine. Okay. That's your decision. You know, use whatever criteria you want, but don't pretend. I don't like the pretend part. It's annoying as hell to me. And I hope we don't go through that when we go through the city manager process.
When is that happening?
Well, that's a good question, isn't it? So, you know, and it, of course, that dovetails into yet another issue, which has to do with the pro and con sides of the remote world in which government seems to be taking place these days.
Right.
You know, there was a preliminary meeting of the Government Operations Committee to discuss the process. Now, maybe they're doing all sorts of things in behind the scenes now, but there's no way anybody, including me, who usually pays pretty close attention to these things, there's no way I could ever find out really what's going on in terms of that process, or if there even is a process. Maybe if I want to play, get all buddy-buddy with one of the counselors, I could get some information on the sly,
right?
But, you know, it's not like there's any kind of a public forum where you sort of get any update on this. You know, one of the points I think I might have mentioned it on last show, was that, you know, when we talk about remote participation and whatever, I think we may have spoken, I'm not sure now. you know, this is at least the way we're doing things now for the city manager process. It's in the Bay, it's the bailiwick of the Government Operations Committee. Doesn't right. necessarily have to be there, but that's the tradition of recent, yeah. you know, cycles has been that way. You know, it's not like you can, well, I tell you what, let me just go to the Government Operations webpage and we'll find out what they're up to. Mm-hmm. Because there is no Government Operations webpage.
You've talked about this before, how committees yeah. don't have, yeah. they should have their own.
Yeah. Right? So the only way you find out what they're up to yeah. is after the fact, when they issue a report that then comes to the city council, you know? You know, the any staff or members of that committee, they can't just, they're not just putting stuff up. They're not saying like, oh, by the way, during the week of April 24th yeah. to 28th, yeah. we will be considering the following thing, or we're going to be having some guests from here.
But all committee meetings, the clerk or someone in the clerk's office takes minutes, and they don't usually come out for at least 2 months, if that right. depends. And I know your argument in the past has been, instead of personal aides, perhaps it could have been people working on committees together rather.
Well, you know, this yeah. is not strictly a matter of the city charter, yeah. you know, because right. this is really just more like practices. But right. in my opinion, they really ought to restructure the way they do day-to-day business.
Yeah.
You know, city council aides should not be assigned to individual councilors. They should be assigned to the committees.
Yep.
And the work of the committees should be much, much, much more public than it is now, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, even the councilors, oftentimes they will complain because there are amendments being proposed mm-hmm. on the night of the council meeting. Well, you know, okay. it wouldn't be a violation of anything, basically, to say, you know, to say, well, if as a councilor wants to offer an amendment, could you please post it to the ordinance committee site so that everybody, including the public, will get a chance to look at it before actually it's formally introduced, you know?
Is that where an amendment to anything would have to go to the ordinance?
I would just suggest it would be a good idea. Right now, we often don't hear about it.
We don't see it. Well, we see it if you're watching it.
And then you get a fuzzy, poor resolution
version.
Where those of us who are a little clever find ways of getting access to
you're
it.
You're pretty
and that
clever.
Includes sometimes taking a screenshot using optical character recognition to kind of extract the text.
Well, I know I've complained to you.
It's terrible.
You found those communications that were, that I had put in one and someone else did on one of the meetings, but I couldn't find it on the agenda packet, and you found it. And then I went to the video, and the video has a download but it shouldn't be that way. They should appear in some more, you know, add them to the, you know,
Crazy. That's right. Yeah. And I just think there are a lot of just sort of procedural deficiencies.
Yeah.
But, you know, these particular counselors love to look, you know, sort of pat themselves on the back, you know, for their, you know, they're making everything remotely available. But the thing is in terms of the things that are potentially controversial, or whatever, they're not doing mm-hmm. much of a good job at all, mm. you know. And we're often finding out these things somewhat after the fact, you know.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, it's a particular grudge of mine.
Yeah.
Quite honestly.
No, I that's a good point. I mean, it's just like.
Yeah. But, you know, like, is it simple? You know, like, for example, if the Government Operations Committee has a notion, even just a notion, completely changeable, it says, well, during the month of May, we will be working out the procedures for how we're going to do the whole city manager process. We expect that during the summer months, we will be in touch with a headhunter firm or doing some big search or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, a schedule, a completely changeable schedule that says these are, mm-hmm. this is how we're thinking about it now. Mm-hmm. It's nowhere, it doesn't exist. I'm sure they have that schedule in their heads, you know?
Yeah, it should be public,
You know, but, you know, you want to talk about democracy and public participation. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm a big believer that the public has to have a whole lot of say in the choice of a city manager. I mean, I've always said it for as long as I can remember that it is the councilors who choose their manager. It's not me. It's not you. It's them. It's 9 people who decide who their manager is going to be.
That's kind of scary, though, depending on who's on the council.
Scary. Well, exactly. It is kind of scary, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on the other hand, in normal times, you know, yes, a reasonable city manager will demand a contract, right? And then if it's a term contract, you'll have to pay him regardless. But the state law does say that the manager serves at the pleasure of the city council. Right. And you can throw out a manager at any given city council meeting. You could do it. They'd be crazy to do it. But the thing is that there's no prohibition against doing that. You know, if there's an election, there will be an election come November, you know, and if there are some changes to the composition of the city council as a result of that, which, and I'm not going to hide from the fact, I dearly hope there is, there are some changes, right? But if there are some changes, then, you know, as soon as they raise their hand and go through the usual inauguration procedures, their first vote could be to fire them, you know, actually, I don't think they'll, I don't know if they'll even have the new manager, and I forget that it may actually be someone after that. No, it's after,
doesn't his term go, is it only till January?
I think it goes into the next council term, but not very deeply into the next council term.
Right.
So, you know, they could just, five people could say, hey, we're gonna appoint the head of human services as the interim city manager.
See, you're saying, so the search for the city manager is gonna start, that has to start soon, like in the summer?
You know, we go through this every time there's a contract coming up. We say, well, you've got to have a big comprehensive process.
And I'm
not a big fan of a big comprehensive process. I just say, look, if you really have an excellent candidate identified and you wanted to just spring that person's name and count to five on a given Monday night, and then so be it, I'm okay with that. I really am.
Save a lot of money.
I'll get, if you choose a nitwit, I'll be very unhappy. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's still your choice, and you know, make your choice. You know, that would be fine. But you know, what typically happens, they'll demand that there has to be this big, extensive process, and then when it actually comes time to, they'll say, well, we're really running behind now, and we don't have time for this now here. So let's just go rush, and then they'll get it done, right? So, I mean, if you really believe in having the big mythical process, the intergalactic search, as I often call it, you really had to have already begun thinking about how that's to be.
I'm sure they have, whatever. Yeah,
but we would never know, would we?
Well, it's not. Yeah.
Well, true. Maybe it isn't. It's not our decision.
Right now, it's not.
But if you are going to pretend as though you want the public's input in whatever, I think the public kind of would like to know, well, should I start thinking about this now? You know, is this something I wouldn't mind participating in discussions about this into the summer months? Or is it the fall? Or is it next January?
But you guess the public has nothing to do with it, though.
I know, but the thing is, they will go through the pretense that it is, just like it's happening right now with the school superintendent, where they have meetings with parents and interested parties and stakeholders, and then school department staff.
But that's true. We had the forums for the city manager. I just remember
that.
When Jay Ash, and was it Jay Ash and somebody?
But then right in the end, one of those, there were three finalists,
he dropped out.
Well, because he kind of knew that they weren't.
The writing was on the wall.
He knew that the votes were there for Louis. So that was that. You know, so, but anyway, I just think if you're going to just do a quick process and just appoint somebody, I would rather you just do it, you know, for both the school superintendent and come time for the manager, just do it then, right? Mm-hmm. But if you do say you want to have a process, then you'd better start telling us what that process is, and give some sort of loose idea about the schedule of when, what to expect and when.
Well, we'll see if anyone's listening to you right now, they'll do that.
Anyway,
okay, we have a few minutes left in this segment, so we should probably think about what we're going to talk about. There was a meeting last week that we didn't comment on.
Yesterday
because of the holiday. But.
Yeah, and so in the second half hour, we'll talk a little bit more about some of those particulars. I think maybe there's one item I think may have actually talked about this in the past, but it's kind of an irritant for me is you know, the misunderstanding of some city councilors about what their role is versus city staff's role.
Are we talking about the legal thing?
Well, we'll talk about legal thing maybe next half hour. Okay. But the thing is that more, you know, like there was one kind where I think it was Councilor Nolan raised an issue about whether the city's purchase of a bucket truck met her exacting standards for environmental.
Did you really look for a high? Are you telling me that there isn't any out there?
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
I think, you know, it's not like our Department of Public Works is completely ignorant about environmental concerns.
They have engineers and everything. Yeah.
I mean, and they're way ahead of the game, you know.
Exactly.
This.
Yeah.
Yet they are good. They are being second guessed on the council floor on whether or not a biodiesel truck for a bucket truck, or how are you going to operate it? Will you be turning the engine off when you're operating the bucket?
Yeah.
Yes, counselor, we will be turning the engine off.
John Nardone gave a really good description of how it works and kind of satisfied that, but even then she voted no. So just out of principle.
I know. Yeah. And it's like, you know, and I'm not trying to get down on this particular counselor here, but I think there is an underlying point here about what the role of counselors are as policymakers.
Well, I guess in her defense, which is what she sees herself as being able to see everything in the city that she gets to decide on through the lens of environmental sustainability. And so she, as she said, is doing that's what people elected her for, whatever, to do that. So she's doing it with, no matter what it is, she's got to look at it through that lens. So I guess you could say, okay, but it gets annoying.
And she's not the only counselor who does
this. No, that's true.
There is a line that you cross where it really is more like micromanagement.
Oh yeah, and saying, look what we should be doing.
Yeah, I mean, hold the city manager accountable to make sure that his staff and the department heads and everybody else are basically adhering to the policies that you really believe in.
Yeah, this gets to the other thing that we talked about 2 weeks ago, which about the hiring of, or the appointment of someone and did you really apply diverse, all that stuff. So it's the same issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, there are a few other matters having to do with boards and commissions I would like to talk to.
Okay. All right. Well, we will be back in a few minutes, right?
Yeah. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.